From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect Weekend. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Coming up on the show today, how reform to Wisconsin's expungement law could make the difference for jobless people in the Milwaukee area.
It's a very big issue among unemployed people, and at a time when unemployment is so low, it's down to around 3%, we're looking for ways to reduce barriers that exist.
Then we learn how Milwaukee's Pride Fest offers local LGBTQ artists a chance to show off the creativity of the community.
It's also a good way to network and align yourself with other artists and other opportunities in the future. So many people spend their time trying to compete with each other. I don't think people take the time out to try to see what they could accomplish if they actually work together.
Plus, we'll weigh our picnic food options with our cheese contributor and have this week's edition of our storytelling series, Exfabula. Lake Effect Weekend is next. News is first.
Good afternoon. This is Lake Effect Weekend on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. We've reported extensively on the issue of mass incarceration and how it impacts the Milwaukee area. But the criminal records of more than a million Wisconsinites impact their lives even after they've served their sentences. Having a conviction prevents many people from being able to get a job.
The legal expungement of a criminal record could make a significant difference in employability for many Wisconsinites. So why isn't it used more often? The Wisconsin Policy Forum explored how expungement works in this state and how Wisconsin's use of it differs from other states around the country. The result is a report released this week, and senior researcher Joe Pietrangelo joins us to share what he learned, starting with what we're talking about when we use the term expungement.
Expungement is the ability to clear a criminal record or to seal it from public access without a court order. So it's a way to be able to move on from a past criminal conviction.
It doesn't mean that the conviction never existed, though.
Right. It's sort of treated as if it never happened when it's expunged. The file still exists, but it is not allowed for public access. And also that applies to the web, because now a lot of the court records are accessed on the web.
Well, and so what sorts of cases are eligible for expungement typically?
So in Wisconsin, it is lower level crime. So it started off, it was only misdemeanors. It did expand in 2009 to include low level nonviolent felonies. It's limited in its scope.
One of the issues, though, that comes up in this report is non-convictions, dismissed charges, and acquittals. Why are those part of a criminal case record at all?
It's a good question. It's always been that way in Wisconsin. The case is still recorded, and there's still access to it even online if the case was dismissed or ended up in an acquittal. It's actually very unusual if you look around the country. Other places tend to remove those from and don't allow public access to them.
So why is this an important time to be exploring this issue, especially in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so we looked at this issue really from a workforce angle because we've done a lot of past research on barriers to employment and had seen in looking at Milwaukee County participants of workforce programs that a large percentage of them have criminal records. It was 42% of the 8 or 9,000 individuals we looked at in Milwaukee County. So it's a very big issue among unemployed people. And at a time when unemployment is so low, it's down to around 3%. We're looking for ways to reduce barriers that exist.
Is there any way to figure out exactly how many people are disqualified from jobs because of a criminal record?
I can't quite go that far. Like I said, there is 1.4 million people in Wisconsin that are estimated to have a criminal record. And when I saw the 42% in the Milwaukee County job seeker pool, that was a lot higher than I expected. Certainly a very common issue statewide.
So while you can't draw a direct correlation, it stands to figure that some percentage of these people who are unemployed and who have a criminal record are unemployed because they have a criminal record.
Right. And Wisconsin does have non-discrimination laws. And, so there are things in place to prevent people from being discriminated against. However, it still tends to be a barrier to getting a job.
Well, and you mentioned that there are people in the system who, you know, are there because of but had their charges dismissed or are acquitted. Are there people who are not employable just because they're in the system in general?
For a non-conviction?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I think that a lot of this stuff is hard to know. It's just, you know, individual employers going online, checking the WCCA website, which is the website that lists all of the conviction records and non-conviction records. So really, it's hard to know exactly what factors are at play when they're making their decisions.
You mentioned that Wisconsin's expungement law is somewhat unusual at a national scale. So what are the ways that it differs from elsewhere? How do these laws work in other states compared to here?
Yeah, and that was a key part of our study, was really comparing us to other states. And we found one unusual thing in Wisconsin is that the decision is made by the judge at the sentencing hearing, and that's when it has to be made. It's the only time it can be made.
They decide whether a case could be expunged?
Exactly. They say, okay, this case, if you complete your sentence successfully, it will be expunged. That's when the decision is made, or they may decide you're not eligible. But you can't come back later after you've completed your sentence and say, you know, I've completed my sentence, I'm ready to move on, and can I clear this? That's not something that is possible currently. Whereas in most states, in fact, all other states, as far as we can tell, it happens after the fact, after the person has completed their sentence.
Other ways that the law differs from other states?
Yeah, other ways are Wisconsin imposes an age restriction. So the crime had to have been committed when the person was under the age of 25. So that's pretty unusual nationally as well. There are a few other states that have age restrictions, but generally it doesn't matter how old you were at the time. Another factor is the non-convictions, which we talked about. And one more is the severity of cases. So in Wisconsin, as I said, you can have some very low-level nonviolent felonies expunged. In other states, in some other states, they're more broadly allowing felonies to be expunged of most types.
Now, when you started this work, you were initially looking at expungement as it pertains to Milwaukee County, correct?
Yeah, because like I said, it came out of our past research on barriers to employment here in Milwaukee. But as we looked into this issue and found that really the state law is what controls most of how this works in the state and in Milwaukee, we expanded it to really have a statewide focus. We did still look at data on Milwaukee County cases, Milwaukee being the largest county and having the most criminal records. We still felt that was relevant, but in terms of where possible changes could be considered, they'd mostly be at the state level.
So given how stringent Wisconsin's expungement law is, how often are cases being expunged in the states?
Well, we didn't specifically look into expungements that had occurred, but other research has done that. The Badger Institute, another research organization, has found that around 100 cases per year are expunged in Milwaukee County and around 2,000 statewide per year.
Well, and so presumably as you looked into how the existing law is applied, you looked at, you know, changes to the existing law. What sorts of changes did you explore, and what would be the upshot of those changes?
Yeah, so one thing we looked at was what if Wisconsin allowed judges to make the decisions after sentences were completed? Now, we can't really say that that would change the number of cases necessarily, but going forward, an individual could come after completing their sentence and petition for expungement, and then the decision would be made then, as it is in every other state. The advantage of that, or judges often feel that they can't really make that decision at sentencing. It's sort of like looking into a crystal ball. We heard that a lot in interviews we did. You know, it's just hard to make that call before the person has gone through their sentence. So that's one change. Another change would be to not only have the decision be made afterwards, but allow people to go back and request expungement of past cases that have been closed. So that would actually be a really large change that would potentially increase the number of eligible cases dramatically by thousands of cases.
That would add some significant administrative cost as well.
Right, and we looked at that. That's definitely a caution in the report, or something that would be a challenge, is that if there's a huge influx of new cases, it could have a lot of, you know, workload and fiscal impacts on local governments. But it partly depends on how the law would be structured. It could be that a lot of these cases could be decided without having to have hearings. So if that's the case, then it could have less impact on the courts.
Well, so in general, is there still some concern about what expungement would do in terms of allowing access to criminal records when criminal records might be relevant?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a balance there where the public wants access to be able to see whether somebody has committed a crime in the past, and but then on the other hand, there's the privacy of the ex-offender and the ability for them to be able to move on at some point from that conviction.
What sort of appetite was there for changes to the expungement law?
Well, interestingly, in 2017, both the state Senate and state assembly considered and approved their own versions of reform to the expungement law. And they passed overwhelmingly on both sides, but they had differences, and those differences weren't resolved. In both cases, they would have shifted the decision-making to after sentence completion. But from there, they kind of diverged in terms of what changes they were considering.
So were there other potential changes that you examined?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, the age restriction is very unusual here in Wisconsin, and that would be another potentially large change. If people of any age could petition for expungement, it could be, we found hundreds of cases per year in Milwaukee County likely would be eligible. In addition, the other changes I mentioned in terms of the severity or allowing non-convictions to be expunged would have smaller impacts. Those would, but they would, you know, also add additional cases potentially.
Joe Pietrangelo, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Joe Pietrangelo is a senior researcher with the Wisconsin Policy Forum. You can go to our website to find a link to the forum's report. It's called A Fresh Start, Wisconsin's Atypical Expungement Law and Options for Reform.
Pride Fest is underway this weekend. After a break, we'll meet the person in charge of booking the talent for the women's stage and a Milwaukee musician making her Pride Fest debut. Lake Effect Weekend continues right after this on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Welcome back to Lake Effect Weekend. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyler. Walking the line and hoping matches the layout. I've been pushing the limits, so mama say I should pray now. That tune called Blow is by Milwaukee hip-hop and R&B artist Kiwi. She has been performing here for a number of years now, but makes her debut on the Pride Fest Women's Spot Stage this year.
Sarah Tybring is the manager of that stage, and she and Kiwi both join me in the studio ahead of Pride Fest. It is great to have you both here today.
Thank you. So excited to be here.
So am I. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And we're going to get to your song in a minute, Kiwi. But Sarah, I want to start, first of all, with why you're both here. I mean, this is the beginning of Pride Fest. It kicks off the festival season in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. But you have a very specific role in Pride Fest. So what is it that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the manager of the Women's Spot Stages. This will be my fourth year running those stages. And it's a stage whose goal is to seek out and promote women artistry and non-binary artistry throughout the local area. We go a little bit further than Milwaukee. We do get artists from around Wisconsin and occasionally into Illinois and Ohio who find us and come to perform on our stage. We have 3 days to promote artists from all genres of music and also other types of art, including we do poetry, we do a comedy showcase, we do this year we have a trans workshop that's about self-care, and then we also have circus and other performance artistry, so we have a circus that's going to be performing with us in the front of the stage.
How fun!
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, it's an honor to be able to do it.
So when you think about Pride Fest, you know, I think a lot of people automatically think of men. Mm-hmm. They automatically think of drag performing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so I think women have often gotten pushed off into the corner. Is it kind of your mission to make sure that doesn't happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's really important to show that there is a vast array of talent within our LGBTQ community, in a greater just female-oriented community. I think that it's really necessary to show that they have an essential niche in offering art. And I also think that it's very important to show that female artistry in the LGBT community isn't just folk music, which I think is a very common thought process that lesbian music is folk art. It is that, but it's also tons of other things. We have rock artists. We have hip-hop artists. We have phenomenal poets. We have people who do physical art, and that those are things that should be seen and should be given a stage and should be promoted just as heavily as any other form of artistry or gender.
So, Kiwi, this is your first time, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
So how did you two connect? Did she reach out to you? Did you reach out to her?
Well, honestly, we've been playing like maybe this game of cat and mouse for the last couple of years where we've connected like a long time ago. But generally, because I'm kind of stubborn in a sense, and I would lose my head if it wasn't attached to my body, I kind of like this year just got on top of it. Like, I'm going to commit to it. I'm going to do it. It's definitely a great experience, and Sarah's awesome. So, I mean, she makes it really easy for you to feel comfortable to provide what you need as an artist. But, you know, when she presented it to me, you know, the pitch she brought was that whole, you know, being a forefront, or bringing to the forefront the spectrum of what being an LGBT artist is. I know a lot of the times, because I do hip-hop, but because I do hip-hop specifically, sometimes people think that I have to be a certain thing, or my music sounds a certain way, or the things that I talk about are generally within this not very broad range of anything. So I always tell people I'm more of a lifestyle artist than a genre artist. And I think Sarah understands that, which is what I greatly appreciate. And it's just a good opportunity to not only display the creativity and the diversity within the LGBT community, but it's also a good way to network and align yourself with other artists and other opportunities in the future. So many people spend their time trying to compete with each other. I don't think people take the time out to try to see what they could accomplish if they actually work together. So this is one of those opportunities I'm really proud to be a part of.
Now, you're from here, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So as an LGBT artist, mm-hmm. do you find that it helps or hinders you outside of Pride Fest?
A little bit of both, if I'm being honest. It helps because it makes it easier for me to get put on a ticket with a lot of guys in a male-dominated industry because of what they think my music is, or what they think the context is, or the content, or because they look at me and they think one thing and I get to bring something refreshing to it all the time. But it also hinders me because it limits what I'm capable of doing when I want to expand out of hip-hop, if I want to do something more mainstream, more involved, some outside of that. It kind of makes it a little bit difficult, not just to get on the ticket, but dealing with other people who have these predetermined notions or judgments of what they think my motives may be, or, you know, things like that. So in a sense, it does help. I've been doing this for a while, so my reputation helps too.
But yeah, everyone has to build that.
Yeah, it took me years to do that. So, I mean, I got a good leg up on that aspect of it, but it's still challenging. You know, I work on it every day, you know, trying to see past it, trying to see the benefit of what I can bring to it, you know, if there's not an opportunity, or if there's not something that somebody wants to, you know, work with me on, then there's somebody else that has another opportunity that might fit better for me, you know. So if I can get one opportunity, I can get another one. There's always going to be an opportunity, and I'll just take advantage of whichever ones that come my way.
You just have to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, or put yourself there.
Yeah, you have to put yourself in the right spaces. You also have to know how to move around in multiple spaces. Most people get stuck comfortably just being around that one group of people that they're used to working with. And I used to be like that when I first started, and that hindered me more than actually me being LGBT. You know, it was because I was uncomfortable getting outside and working with different people that could expose me to different things or have different resources that may be beneficial for me in the long run. I was so comfortable within that group of people that I was working with that I didn't see the benefit of reaching out and branching off and networking. I didn't understand the value of my network at that time, which I've come a long way.
So. Yeah, and I was going to say, Sarah, is that something you're also hoping that other artists on the stages will do, like get out of their comfort zone and reach out and maybe find collaborators or just be exposed to other things?
Yes, absolutely. I think that one of the big benefits of doing this is the recognition that we have to work together as a community in order to raise each other up. And I think that hip-hop especially is a community where that needs improvement, especially among female artistry. And I get that feedback every year from artists in my hip-hop showcases. And they have met each other, and they work together now. I have several members that continue to work together. They pull each other on tickets. They do collaborations outside of Pride Fest as a result. And I think that that's exceptionally important to do. And I think also it's really fun to watch people be exposed to different things. For example, last year I had two artists that performed similar time frames. And at the end of the night, we caught them in the bathroom singing to each other in harmony. And this is Alice Hart and Katie Beth. And they're amazing vocalists. And so this year, what I said to them was, I would like to have you back, but I would really like it if you do a duet act together, because you are so phenomenal and you clearly were just having like the most fun you could ever have. And if you don't mind me putting you together on a ticket, I think that that should happen. Of course, they were super thrilled and they're going to do it. But it's really fun to be able to watch people commune together. And I love to preach about all kinds of fun things. And one of the things I say to all the performers when I'm sending them out all their information is, please remember to support each other. Please remember to promote each other. Please remember to invite everyone to all of the events, because everyone deserves this shot. Everyone deserves this recognition. And we're all doing the same thing in a different way. And if we stand together, we can do anything we want to do. There's no reason why we can't. There's so much talent and so much passion, so many good humans involved in this production. And then outside of that, the reaches are just insane how far we can go if we do those things. So
one of the things that I think is so interesting about any of the festivals that have a specific focus, whether it's Pride Fest or German Fest or Irish Fest, you know, you're obviously preaching to the choir. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking to your tribe, whatever mm-hmm. that tribe happens to be. But you also have the opportunity to speak to people who are not in your tribe. You have a chance to reach people who might not hear you otherwise, or like you were saying, Kiwi, might have an idea of who you are by how you identify. So they think, well, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
But then they hear you and they go, oh, wait a minute. You know, now, is that also something that you both hope for in
of
your
course.
Own ways? Yeah.
That's always what you hope for, no matter if it's, you know, somebody who doesn't necessarily listen to hip hop music, or if it's somebody who doesn't necessarily think they have anything relatable to LGBTQ artists, or somebody who just generally doesn't get around a lot of sociable people like that, or they don't think you have anything for them. So it's always refreshing to see how your music has an effect on people and how they respond to it, especially when it's positive. You know, there's not really many negative reactions to my music that I could think of at all. They've all been genuinely positive experiences for people that I appreciate at the end of the day, because all that work I put into trying to get on a ticket, it actually pays off because somebody gets something out of it. And that's the goal when people listen to your music. You want them to be able to relate to it, to take something from it, to understand at least you or where you're coming from. So,
well, and the tune that you sent me, Blow,
yes,
is wonderful. It's a wonderfully catchy tune.
Thank you.
There's so many different elements going on. It's very melodic. It's very rhythmic. It's all kinds of different things. And I can hear all of your influences
in
that one song.
That's
or at least many of your influences, anyway.
Oh,
tell me a little bit about it. What made you write it? What was the impetus?
I work a lot. Sarah can tell you that. I work like a madman. Because I put all of my money goes into my music. I'm a firm believer. If you don't invest in yourself, nobody else will want to invest in you. So I was at work one day, you know, working a job I hate years ago. And I was mopping the floor. And this producer sent me a beat like, I think you'll like this, you know. It was slow, so I had nothing to do. So I'm listening to the beat in my headphones. And all I kept thinking was that first part that comes on the beginning. You know, your heart's not there and you caught right there. You shouldn't be staying if your heart's not there. And I was like, this kind of goes to the beat, you know. So I was mopping the floor and then everything just came to me. Like, essentially the melody, what I wanted the hook to be, you know, what I wanted it to be about is just about being free, free from the things that tie you down, free from those things that may deter you or prevent you from chasing your dreams or even trying. Because, I mean, failure at the end of the day is still a success in my eyes. Some people don't even attempt to do anything, and that's essentially a failure to me. At least from a failure, you can learn and you can adjust and you can move forward. So it's just about being free from the things that prevent us from being ourselves, prevent us from attaching ourselves to each other and learning from each other's experiences and pain and joy and everything.
Milwaukee hip-hop and R&B artist Kiweed makes her PrideFest debut on the Women's Spot Stage this year. The Spot Stage hosts many other performances throughout the weekend celebrations. Sarah Tybring is the manager of that stage. You can find more information about PrideFest at WUWN.com.
A quick break now, and then we'll talk about some cheeses for your next picnic. They're not necessarily the fancy ones, but they are certainly tasty. That's coming your way when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee's NPR.
Welcome back to Lake Effect Weekend from Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Hyde.
And I'm Bonnie North. As you get ready for your weekend picnic or barbecue, don't forget the cheese. And that's certainly one of the messages our contributor, Jeanette Hurt, would have you remember.
Jeanette is the Milwaukee author of a number of books on cheese and other food and drink. From time to time, she brings some of those cheeses in to share with us and you, virtually anyway. Hi, Jeanette. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Mitch.
It is always nice to see you, and not just because you bring cheese with you, but it's a
side benefit.
Special bonus. Yes, exactly. And you brought a number of cheeses with you. I'm counting, what?
Four.
Four, yes.
They're all from Clock Shadow Creamery, which is just down the street from you, practically.
It is. And do these have a particular spring kind of feel to them?
Some of them do. But the other thing is there are some different cheeses. Let me introduce the cheeses
introduce
first.
Introduce our cheese plate, yes.
Okay, well, we have the Montague, which is an aged sheep and cow milk blend. It's just very nice. It's a really good munching cheese. Then you have a Colby, but what makes this one different, it's a double cream.
Okay.
They make the regular, they have one batch of milk, and then they skim the cream off of another cheese and put that in. So it's a richer, creamier Colby, but still very mild, very good for sandwiches. Then you have the Cream City Brick. And the most interesting thing about this particular cheese, it's made with the milk from the cows that go to State Fair.
Really?
So they, you know, there's a whole bunch of milking cows at
right.
State Fair. They get milk. The milk goes over to Clock Shadow, and they make this cheese.
Huh.
Then the other cheese, of course, is their Quark, which is a very, it's a fresh, creamy cheese, and this one is combined with the S.A. Bray chutney, a locally made
yes.
chutney. And then, of course, I have some peach oolong tea. The other big news in terms of cheese right now is the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board, which has been promoting Wisconsin cheese and dairy products forever, has changed its name to Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin because the board basically works for dairy farmers. Dairy farmers give them money to promote cheese and yogurt and milk, and they thought that was appropriate to explain because we are a dairy state and so, we are a dairy farmers state.
So the name puts the dairy farmers front and center as opposed to the marketers front and center.
Yes. And then one of their big pushes right now is, of course, You've got June Dairy Month coming up, and there's all sorts of breakfast on the farm, which if you haven't done it, is a fun event. And then in July, they have the American Cheese Society competition. They just, this past March, finished up with the World Cheese Championship. Unfortunately, unlike 2 years ago when a Wisconsin cheese was crowned grand champion, we were not grand champion. We still had five cheeses in the top 20 finals, but we didn't beat the European cheeses this year. We did, however, take home more prizes than in any other region in the world, but that's not surprising.
And so what was the grand champion, do you
the
know?
The grand champion cheese was a French Basque hard cheese called Esquirou, pronounced Esquirou.
Okay.
And
you did not bring any of that?
No, I did not bring any of that.
Not available at Clock Shadow Creamery.
No, it's not. Clock Shadow just sells Wisconsin cheese and primarily cheese made at Clock Shadow or Cedar Grove.
So let's talk about what goes into a cheese and tea pairing, because this is not a combination that we all have probably necessarily thought of a great deal.
Well, if you think about tea, it has a lot of the same characteristics as wine, as well as tannins, which wine, of course, contains. And you can have very light, very delicate teas as well as very aged, robust, earthy teas. And they range the gamut from white teas, green teas, black teas, oolong teas, pu'er teas. There's so many different kinds of teas. Then you add in different flavorings. And a good tea maker like Rishi doesn't add flavors. They actually add things like real fruits and herbs and spices. But you can add those. For example, a perfect example of a tea and cheese pairing is to take a raspberry ale washed Bellavitano, which I know you've had, and then you pair it with a raspberry tea or a raspberry laced green tea, for example. Perfectly paired. What we have here today is I just brewed up some peach oolong because that's what I had been drinking this morning. And then I stopped at Clock Shadow and tasted a bunch of cheeses. And all four of these taste delicious, but they're all different. Let me introduce the cheeses and then okay. We can taste them one by one and taste them with the tea.
Okay.
The one other thing I will say which makes tea a very good beverage with cheese is it's warm. And the warmth of the tea can enhance the flavors and the taste of a cheese. So let's start with, the chutney.
Okay.
Cheese, because it's just, it's creamy, but it's also very sweet.
And this is the same company that makes the South African sausages.
Yes.
And we are trying this with, these are rice crackers.
It's lovely. It's sweet.
Oh.
It's creamy. Mm. It would taste great on your bagel instead of cream cheese. But it would also be great to add to a sandwich for a sweet and savory note. Taste them with the tea.
And they are a very nice complement to each other.
You pick up the floral notes of the tea. You pick up the floral or sweet notes in the cheese.
This is it's a very sweet cheese.
Because the chutney is sweet.
That is delicious. I'm going to have more.
I think you should. Now, the next one we're going to go with is the Brick.
Okay.
It's just it's not a very strong Brick. It's a very mild Brick.
Very creamy Brick.
Creamy, a little bit nutty, but not too nutty.
I like to think of myself that way. Also a very nice pairing with the peach oolong.
It's very smooth. It's complimentary.
And it's interesting how the peach oolong blends in so nicely with both something that was very sweet and something that was very mild.
Exactly.
We are onto the Colby.
We're onto the Colby. Traditional Wisconsin cheese.
And Colby was invented in Wisconsin, correct?
In Colby, Wisconsin.
Yep.
So it's creamier.
That is a delicious Colby.
It's one of those. It's very creamy, but very, very mild. Colby's a very mild cheese with tiny holes, similar to cheddar, but different cultures.
And I think I like the peach oolong with the Brick more than I like it with the Colby.
Exactly. Still goes well, but the Colby, while also mild, isn't as nutty.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't pair with the tea quite as well.
So we're on to the Montague?
Yes, which is a more heavily aged cheese.
And remind, yeah, tell us a little bit more about the Montague.
It is, you can taste, this is a lot nuttier.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit earthy, almost grassy. You can almost taste the grass that the cows and sheep grazed on. It's aged. So aging enhances flavors, and it's different because it's two different kinds of milks combined.
This is the sheep and cows.
And sheep milk typically has a higher fat content than cow's milk, which has a different effect on cheese making, which is why when you combine milks, it's has a different effect. You have to know how to combine and so that they don't separate and taste horrible. That's one interesting thing about Wisconsin cheeses, which I've talked about before. Wisconsin is one of the few areas of the country, if not the world, that combines different kinds of milk into singular cheeses. You can have cow and goat. You can have sheep and goat. You can often have cow, goat, and sheep.
I think you may have brought us cow, goat, and sheep the last time you were here.
And part of that reason, if you look at it, we don't only make a lot of cow's milk in Wisconsin, but we also make a lot of goat's milk and sheep's milk. In fact, we make more produce more goat's milk and sheep's milk than any other state.
I will say, by the way, that I like the peach oolong tea with the Montague more than I liked it with the Colby, but still not quite as much as I liked it with the Brick.
Well, the Brick, it's, again, very mild, light, floral, and if you wanted to make it an even better pairing, get some peach preserves and add that to the top of the cheese. And then you pick up the peach, you pick up the earthiness, you pick, it's a good combination. And again, when you add things, whether it's for tea or wine or cocktails or bourbon, whatever beverage you have, if there are certain aromas, whether they're peach or smoke or whatever it happens to be, although I wouldn't pair cheese with tobacco, and I know some wines have aromas of tobacco.
Right.
You take something and you create a bridge. If something has grapefruit notes, add a grapefruit chutney or a grapefruit jam. If something has cherry notes, some cherry preserves, things like that, or a dish that has cherries in it with the cheese, that's one of the principles of pairing.
I'm honestly dazzled by the Brick.
Isn't it wonderful?
It really is.
And it came from cow's milk here in, well, West Allis, but the Milwaukee area.
It's not a variety that I'd given a lot of thought to before now, but I feel like I'm going to seek out more.
It's a delicious variety. I love fresh Bricks.
Well, Jeanette Hurt, always wonderful to see you. Thank you for bringing these terrific cheeses again and opening my eyes and hopefully everyone's eyes to the idea of pairing cheese and tea.
Thanks, Mitch.
Jeanette Hurt is the Milwaukee author of a number of books on cheese and other food and drink. She's also Lake Effect's regular ambassador to the world of Wisconsin cheeses. You can explore all of her segments with us at WUWM.com.
One last break and then the latest episode of X Fabula when Lake Effect Weekend returns on 89.7 WUWM.
One. Welcome to X Fabula!
True personal story.
X Fabula!
X Fabula is a Milwaukee nonprofit committed to strengthening community bonds through the art of storytelling.
And it is time for X Fabula Radio, part of Lake Effect Weekend, every weekend on WUWM. I'm Bruce Winter, Leah Delaney, X Fabula co-founder, is here as well. And on this Pride weekend in Milwaukee, What's our theme?
It is Pride. Surprise, surprise. So many great events happen on Pride Weekend in Milwaukee. We have that wonderful Lakefront Festival of the Arts where people from all over can come over and celebrate. And there's stuff going on at Walker's Point. There's the awesome parade that goes on. And just people, I've just noticed that people are in such great spirits in Pride Weekend.
Mm-hmm. And the stories we have today are kind of on the theme of it's not easy being me.
Yeah, no, that's actually a great theme on top of our theme. Do you want a job at Exfabula? We have a couple of really wonderful stories to share today. The first story we're going to share was told at our Now or Never Story Slam back in 2010. This story is from Ashley Altadonna. She is a transgender activist and sexual educator here in Milwaukee, who actually owns her own film company as well, Tall Lady Pictures. So let's listen to her journey as being a transgender person.
Well, for me, it was a lot of things that happened. And in fact, like, you know, in thinking about tonight, I was thinking about a lot of the now or never moments. And being transgendered, there are a ton of them. You know, now or never when you come out to friends and family. Now or never when you decide if you're going to start transitioning, taking hormones, all those sorts of things. So in coming out to my parents, it was definitely a complicated process. My mom, I told my mom first because I thought, you know, she's a woman, she'll be able to handle this a little better. I told my dad over Christmas break one time. We went out to this restaurant and we kind of like hemmed and hawed around, or I sort of hemmed and hawed around the subject. And then, you know, was like, oh, by the way, I want to be a woman now. So it was kind of just like that, but it was a lot more emotionally conflicting. My brother, on the other hand, I was really worried how he was going to take it. My brother's always been this sort of like uptight guy. And I was afraid he was going to be super upset. So I decided I would write him an email. But the folly on my part was that I wrote this email on April 1st. So I didn't plan that one, time that one out right away. But when I was 13, I started like dressing up and trying on my mom's clothes. Sadly, I didn't have an older sister or anything like that. But I didn't really know. I grew up in Texas in a sort of like secluded little suburb. From the time I was 13, I was trying on clothes, but I didn't really like understand what was going on. I just like knew that I liked to do this. And at the time, I kind of thought it was this sexual fetish. It wasn't until actually I moved to Milwaukee and was out on my own for the first time that I was able to like go online and find out about transgenderism, transsexuals, and learn what was, you know, actually happening with me. But it was another 5 years before I actually had the guts and the courage to go for it. And again, it was sort of a lot of things. It was the fact that I had just graduated from UWM with a film degree after 6.5 years of out-of-state tuition. I was in a local band called the New Blind Nationals for 3.5 years, and then our band called It Quits. And before that, I was the rugged front man, apparently. Who knew? And the other major thing that happened was that I got into a relationship with my girlfriend, now my fiance, Maria, and she was hugely instrumental into supporting me in my transition. It's sort of, a lot of people say it's like their end goal when they're, and they think about people who are transitioning is like having that surgery, but really, I don't really feel that it's, I live every day as a woman now, and so I feel like I've kind of achieved that thing where I want it to be. That will just be sort of like the icing on the cake. Of course, you know, like it's weird being a girl with a penis, but
exposed.
Thanks for having me.
And that was Ashley Altadonna's story, and that's such strength.
Yeah, strength and courage to go through what to change sexes like that, and to be an entrepreneur as she is too, owning her own film company and everything. That's great.
Yeah, and she has a blog set up as well, talladypictures.com, that I recommend everybody check out. So if you need any sort of encouragement, or just fascinating person to read about. So
on Pride Weekend, we're doing Pride Stories.
We certainly are.
And number two is?
Yeah, it is from Becca Klusendorf. Here is her come clean story about her authentic self.
So there have been signs that I'm not exactly straight from as soon as I can remember. In grade school and middle school, I always used to stare at pretty girls. In high school, I would have sleepovers with my girlfriends, which I think is actually very normal. But then there was also cuddling, which I don't think was super normal. I went to Lilith Fair all 3 years. I don't know if you guys remember that, but it was like this girl power feminist music festival in the 90s. And I actually was the WISCO poster child for Lilith Fair. The next day, I was on the cover of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, dancing in a crowd. Everybody was sitting, listening to Jewel like normal people do when they listen to Jewel, and there was one person raging, and that was me. And so they took a picture of that. In college, I was always trying to find pockets of gay people. I joined Gay Straight Alliance as an ally. And I went to Pride Fest during the day. If you've ever gone to Pride Fest during the day, you know that there are about 15 people there. Five of them are performing a drag show, and the rest of them are selling concessions. But amazingly, it never occurred to me that I might be gay. Probably the most telling sign was how I felt, or I should say didn't feel, about my boyfriends. I had many wonderful boyfriends that I loved, but I could never fall in love with them. So I think the reason that I might not have realized that I was gay was because I grew up in a fundamentalist, evangelical Christian household. So we didn't just go to church once a week or even twice a week. We usually went to church about 3 times a week. In many ways, we were religious in a cute way, kind of like the Duggars. We were homeschooled, and we didn't celebrate Halloween because that was very clearly the devil's holiday. Instead, we would go to the library or the zoo, which wasn't even anywhere close to being a fair trade-off. We were always sort of halfway preparing for the apocalypse or the rapture because of this book series called Left Behind. I don't know if anybody remembers that. But my dad actually started raising chickens in our garage, and we always had a very large supply of canned food on hand. So there is also a very dark and hard side growing up like this. Our daily lives were really steeped in a lot of shame and judgment. So in the fundamentalist evangelical Christian world, there's some sin that's okay, like lying or cheating, but there's some sin that's definitely not okay, and this would include all sexual sin. So in our family, being gay was really akin to being a murderer or a terrorist. It really wasn't okay. So actually, my sister in college, she had a gay roommate, and my parents actually stopped paying for college for her because her roommate was gay. So you see, I couldn't be gay, because if I were gay, that would mean I might not have a family anymore. So anytime any thought of being anything other than straight would rise into my head, I'd push it down so far and so fast that it barely registered on a conscious level. I had to build a 40-foot wall around my heart and just live in my mind. So fast forward, I was 29 years old. I'd been dating a very handsome, successful, kind young attorney for about 4 years when I was hired to teach nursing at a local college. I wasn't happy. I didn't feel like I was living my life. And I hoped that if I could make my life look perfect enough on the outside, that it would eventually feel okay on the inside, but it never did. So I was looking at the faculty list before the semester started, and I noticed that there was a very attractive and also very gay woman that I would be working with. I don't know if I could have hid forever, but it became a hell of a lot harder to hide once I met her. I felt a tsunami of emotions that I had never felt before when I met her. As the semester continued, my initial amusement at having a girl crush turned into absolute terror when I realized, oh my God, I fell in love with a woman. So I was at a, this was the biggest crossroad that I've ever had in my life. Do I continue to live the life that I was raised to live, or do I choose to follow my true self and live my true life? I'm happy to say that I came clean to myself and to my family and my friends, and I came out and started to live my authentic life. These past 4 years have been the most challenging 4 years in my entire life. I've had some really hard moments, and my heart has been shattered in a million places. When my mom found out about my sexuality, I heard that she locked herself in the bathroom and told my dad that she was going to kill herself. She told me that she didn't want a relationship with me. But these 4 years have also brought me my highest highs. I fell in love for the first time, and then I fell in love another time. I've developed a wonderful second LGBT family, and I've had so many supportive friends and family. In many ways, my life really started when I chose to live as my authentic self. Living as your authentic self is scary and vulnerable and terrifying, because when somebody rejects you, they're not just rejecting a constructed image of you, they're actually rejecting you. But I wouldn't have it any other way. Thank you.
And that was Becca Klusendorf's story about coming out.
Yeah, I have heard this kind of story before, a person who tries all their life to deny what they're feeling inside to mm-hmm. fit in with society, and then finally gives in with, wait, this is who I am. Right. Why can't I be who I am?
Right, and the amount of liberation to feel that must be insurmountable.
The albatross must just fly away all of a sudden.
So. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Great story.
So, yeah, I mean, I love our ex-fabulous storytellers. People who are really courageous get up there and just divulge such earth-shattering events that happen in their life, and this is not out of those bounds. So I want to thank Ashley Altadonna and Becca for sharing those stories with us.
And planning is underway already for next season, isn't it?
Yes, season 10. We're rolling into the double digits in our seasons. So we will be starting to think of new themes for next season for our Story Slams. We'll have different community collaborations. We still have memberships. We're getting sponsorships currently. We are underway, my friend. If you want to keep updated on anything going on in the storytelling related world, please go to exfabula.org.
All right. And if I have an idea for a theme, I can submit it there.
You certainly can, friend.
I've got a few.
All right. Fabulous. Happy Pride Week in Milwaukee.
All right. We'll see you next weekend.
Ex Fabula is a regular feature on Lake Effect Weekend, and with that, it wraps up the show for today. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Thank you so much for making us a part of your afternoon. Lake Effect Weekend airs every Saturday and Sunday from 3 to 4, and be sure to tune into our weekday version of the show. That's at 10 in the morning.
It's all on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Stay tuned now. All Things Considered is next. It's 4 o'clock.